fact of the matter is, it's actually accomplishment that brings progress.
Most contractors don't fail because they aren't working hard enough. They fail because they confuse activity with progress.
We don't have recruiting problems. We have retaining problems.
When results slow down, the instinct is always the same. Do more, move faster, push harder.
Contribution acknowledgement is a huge retaining tool to businesses.
This isn't a motivational conversation. It's a clarity conversation.
AI has become a valuable piece of how I go to market.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
Most contractors don't fail because they aren't working hard enough. They fail because they confuse activity with progress. When results slow down, the instinct is always the same. Do more, move faster, push harder. But what if it's actually reinforcing the problem? My guest today is Reggie Brock, and this conversation will change the way you think about growth, leadership, and performance. Reggie has spent nearly 2 decades working inside home services businesses, and he's obsessed with one question. Why do some companies grow predictably under pressure, while others slowly drift off course, even with good people and good intentions? In this episode, we talk about why the biggest constraint in most businesses isn't effort, talent, or tools, but what's something that's been normalized and never questioned. Reggie breaks down why hustle often hides misalignment, how culture shows up long before it ever hits your KPIs, why dashboards tell you what already went wrong, but not what's coming, how clarity disappears under pressure, and how to protect it, why most companies are great at attracting people, but terrible at keeping them, and how removing friction, not adding force, is what actually restores momentum. We also get into how culture becomes a real asset in acquisitions, why teams collapse when pressure hits, and how leaders can detect problems early instead of reacting late. This isn't a motivational conversation. It's a clarity conversation. If you're working hard, moving fast, and still feel like something's off, but you can't quite name it, this episode will help you see what's actually shaping your results. Let's get into it.
Hi, everyone. This is Mauricio Cardinal. I'm going to have Reggie Brock here with me. Welcome to the show, Reggie.
Thank you, Mauricio. Good to be here.
I'm excited to talk to you. We had a great conversation last time. The things that you brought up was very interesting things. I think things that a lot of contractors need to hear. So I can't wait to get this going with you.
Yeah, it's. I think that this is a conversation that, if applied, like anything, you know, you have to hear stuff and apply it for it to be useful. And that's my hope today.
Yeah. Awesome. So you said often that we confuse progress with activity. How do contractors fall into that trap?
So a lot of times we're looking for progress, but what happens is we think activity naturally brings that. And the fact of the matter is, it's actually accomplishment that brings progress. And so I think we live in a day and age where there's loud voices in our industries telling us, listen, the way you fix this is just get more active. And I don't believe that. I think, for example, if you're out knocking doors as a contractor and you know, you knock 50 doors, your requirement is to knock 50 doors a day. And, you know, the idea of knocking doors, especially like in a roofing industry, is to access the roof to, you know, do the inspections and things like that. But so if you've got a guy knocking 50 doors a day and they're getting on no roofs, my question is, what kind of sense does it make to have them knock 50 more? If the 50 that they're knocking, highly active, but they're not accomplishing anything, why would you want them to double up? And so I think what happens is we've confused and we think kind of activity-based strategies is the chemotherapy to our problems, meaning it fixes everything if we just get more active. And I don't believe that. I believe that we have gotten to a place where we are confusing activity with accomplishment, and one doesn't always mean the other. And so progress occurs when we have to be active, but our activity has to accomplish something, not just for the sake of being active. And so that's kind of the difference to me, is like progress to me is found in accomplishment. And so the activity is required, but progress is actually established by accomplishment.
Yeah, I think it's also could be a skill gap issue, right? If somebody is knocking 50 doors, you say, a day, but they're not getting any appointments from that. And then someone else knocks the same 50 doors, but they're getting 5 appointments. That person has obviously has a skill. right? So it's a, they're a lot more effective if they do another 50 doors. So it's actually the skill gap they're missing too as well.
Yeah. And I think that's the lesson learned is when you've got the activity, but you don't have the accomplishment, what's really going on? Like, you know, it's obviously they've been able to do the activity, but to your point, they're just not developed enough in their skill to turn the activity into accomplishment. So I think they work hand in hand.
And how can contractors or just business owners in general find what's holding them back instead of like, well, how do they get more clarity into that, into the actual specific thing?
Yeah, that's a great word. And it's a huge centerpiece of what I do. And that's clarity. If we lack clarity in terms of what our real challenges are, how can we ever fix them? And so there are very few tools out there that really isolate what I call pre-behavior challenges. And that is, so we have these issues going on inside of us that may never show up on our dashboards, but they're issues that people have. And how do we create a culture and an environment where people are confident enough to bring some of these challenges forward as inhibitors to their progress, and then us be willing to train them through that, as opposed to everybody hiding stuff. You know, we've created environments that people don't feel safe, right? Where they just, and I'm not talking about just physically, I'm talking about they don't feel safe that their contribution matters, or if they really reveal what's holding them back, that there'll be a loss of confidence, or they'll maybe, you know, whatever the situation is. So I think that you have to have a culture build that embraces vulnerability and honesty and openness, or you can't ever find progress that's sustainable. And so, yeah, I think that's a great point, and I think it's important to people. And that is like, how do you create a culture where people feel like they belong enough, right, to be able to share even some of the challenges that they're facing and not fear retribution, judgment, or loss.
Yeah, and I think it's about also creating a culture of feedback, right? How that's something that I think I've struggled with is because I used to do this before as a manager, and obviously it was the wrong approach, but it's what I did, and I didn't know any better. It was if I were training a group of salespeople, for example, and we would do the calls, right, and listen to the calls, and I would kind of point out the things that they were doing wrong in front of other people. Some people might be very sensitive to that. And it's actually, and maybe I didn't have the right culture to that, but that's something as an example that I could think of. Like, at the end of the day, I was just trying to help, but sometimes people are just very sensitive to like, hey, we're speaking to 100 people. How do you?
So I talked to one of my clients yesterday who owns a really successful roofing company. And one of his people had come to me and was concerned about kind of how their conversations went, meaning there was a lot of back and forth, and there was a lot of agitation in their conversations. Both very talented people, but they have not yet learned the power of great communication. And in my opinion, and so I told this owner, I said, "You're really, really good at what I call hard coaching. I don't know kind of the world you grew up in, but at my age growing up, coaches weren't afraid to coach you." Like, you know, you didn't have parents sitting in the stands going like, treat my son better, you know, give him a jersey because he's shown up. No, we had to be hard coached. And so I'm used to being hard coached, where people would be like, you know, at times even felt like I was being criticized. But the way that I grew was not just being hard coached, but knowing that in it I was loved. Like, these guys were really interested in my success, and they saw things beyond me that required them to get into me more, right? But they also had this innate ability to validate me. And so I told my client, I'm like, you have that down, the hard coaching, but you just have to validate people too. I mean, there's such a balance that we have to have in employee development, and we cannot be afraid to show the human side of ourselves in terms of our interaction with people. Look, sometimes people need to be kicked in the tail a little bit. But at the same time, if all you're doing is kicking them in the tail and there's not validation and there's not a sense of I belong here, they're not going to stay. And their progress as individuals will never be fulfilled. And so I think there's that balance of between being hard coached and validation and confidence build that I think is a rare gift and talent.
I know what you mean. I think what you know, basically, just basically be being straight up and, hey, this is what you did wrong and fix it, right?
A quick thing before I get back to it. I'm hosting a small private workshop in Miami Beach on May 22nd. 30 contractors max. We're covering how to turn the leads you're already generating to actual revenue using systems and AI. The whole conversion side of your business that most people ignore. It's at the Palms Hotel, $297 to attend. And we review every application. If you're doing $2 million or more and you feel like you should be further ahead, this room is for you. Go to contractormarketingpros.net/event. Seats are going fast.
Like we just, like, somebody wants a job, we have a hole to fill. You know, if they're interested and, you know, all the details can be worked out, we bring them on. But, and so as a result, rather than knowing someone up front to where you know how they're motivated, which then helps me set tone in terms of my conversation with them. But what happens is we just herd people in and we take our management style and just throw it at everybody the same way. And we wonder why people don't react to the same, react to us the same way, you know? And so I think it takes a gift, but I think to understand how to best deal with people, you've got to stop guessing and understand how they're wired. You have to understand what motivates them, how they show up every day, what kind of coaching they need. And you, listen, there's some coaching that's very general. Like, I mean, there's just some things that, you know, that we, but when it comes down to personal development, you've got to customize your strategy in terms to the person that you're talking to. And this blanket approach to coaching doesn't work for everybody. Like some people respond, some don't. And I think the thing that bothers me the most is that in a lot of industries that I work in, the mentality of people is this: they're rentals. So you bring them in, you get everything you can out of them, but you've already assumed when you hire them that they're probably just going to be here a short time. So you squeeze as much out of them as you can, and then you just a mentality of, we'll get the next one when this one leaves. And so and because getting to know somebody and know their motivations and know how they're wired takes time, effort, and energy that most people don't want to give. So you build cultures that attract people, but you can't keep anybody. So they come in and then they start understanding, maybe you get everything out of them you possibly can. Then they start seeing some realities of what your culture really is all about. And we have these fast disconnects. And so I think the more upfront you can do to equip yourself and the potential person coming to work for you about what our motivations are, what their motivations are, and how does this work best together in the role you're looking it in, I think saves a lot of headache and a lot of resources down the road.
Yeah, I can't wait till we get to that part about employee retention and some of the things that you're doing. It's very unique. You said that most businesses are constrained by something that's normalized and never questioned. How does that show up in contracting companies?
So I think, for example, when I talk about normalizing things, I think what we look at is, let me give you an example. For example, with communication. We've normalized that it's not important to be effective in our communication. It just has to be done. So in a lot of cases, what we've done is we have chosen meetings over meaningful communication. And I'm not talking about frequency, I'm talking about accuracy. So a lot of times, even with some of these AI tools, I see a lot of people who are using AI tools to respond to messaging. And I don't think that's wrong, but I think it takes out the human element of it to a certain degree for a lot of people, just so that they don't have to take the time or whatever to have a meaningful response to a question or situation challenge that surfaced. So I think what's happened is we've taken critical components of business. We've just accepted things. Like I told you just a minute ago, in my opinion, we don't have recruiting problems. We have retaining problems. And so we can get people in by the droves, but keeping them is another challenge. But what we've normalized is this: that's just the way the business is. You're not going to be able to keep people long. So things that have traditionally been important to growth and sustainability, we have just kind of glossed over and just accepted things that 10, 15, 20 years ago, we didn't accept as normal. Now what's normal has caused collapse, in my opinion, in regard around stability inside of companies, which does this: it makes people uncomfortable to stay. And so I work on six different fundamentals inside of each company that are just really focused on, you know, if this has been normalized and is creating failure, how do we disrupt it and return it back to its original need and purpose for the company? And so I think we have just, we just don't want to have to take the time, energy, and effort to rework it. So we just accept things that we've in the past hasn't been normal, but now is. And for, I'll give you another great example. I see a lot of guys hiring these hero, you know, they have, they're always looking for that one or two person that kind of is the sales hero inside of the group. And, you know, we look for, rather than building a, more of a wider approach, we try to find these superstars and we just try to build our business around. And what happens if one of them fails or leaves or goes somewhere else? It disrupts. And in the past, we would rather have five good producers than one really superstar. And we've normalized this superstar mentality. And I think it's caused lack of progress in our business.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you retain employees long-term?
So I think one of the things that you've got to be really mindful of is that people's choice now drives them more than anything else. So if they go into a place, people don't like the day of someone working somewhere 20 or 30 years is rare. Like it's just rare. And I think one of the reasons we can't retain people is people come into our businesses and after they get there, they feel like I don't belong here. Like they were attracted to maybe some success they saw or maybe even some polished advertising or whatever that got them in the door. But there's nothing there that they find sustains them enough to stay. Let me give you an example. Forbes magazine just did a huge study on this about employee retention. And the number one, so they did a top seven or eight list. I can't remember if it was seven or eight, but there was eight different factors that they studied particularly about retention. And so the leading statistic they showed was this, that 46% of people who are employed right now are looking for their next job. I'm talking about people that are employed right now. And so as they look, they studied that, they realized, so they started asking, why are the reasons that you're wanting to leave? And my first thought was I can get make more money somewhere else or better benefits or something like that. Better benefits and money was number six and seven on their list of why they're leaving. The number one reason is they did not feel like they belonged or their contribution to this organization mattered. People are looking for they're just looking to belong. And most of the challenges that are the, and be a part of something that they feel they're contributing to that's bigger than themselves. And so we are so isolated in our efforts. We don't get close enough to build any relationships anymore inside of business. We just like, go do your thing, get in your lane, keep your head down, move forward. And, you know, we just don't, you know, there's not much community in business anymore. And so I don't know, and I may be a lone wolf in this, but I really feel like community still matters to most. I think that fabric, connective tissue matters, right? Where people feel like they're a part of something that they can depend on other than their own resources. So I think the retaining strategy that people have is when they can build a culture where people are seen, they're heard, and their contribution matters. And I found this, that when that environment sits in place, it has a way of stabilizing not just the organization, but the people in the organization. And you really find that they have no reason to leave. And so retention is really about not getting them in the door, but how do they stay? And if they, the longer they stay will be tied into how much they feel like their contribution matters, how much they're heard, right? And a sense of belonging. And so that's what I work on is how to, you know, if, do you want people to get up you want people to get up every day and want to be there, right? If they're just drudgingly coming in and showing up, it's going to show up in performance. But when people want to be there, they bring their best. And so how do we create a culture not just to attract people, but to keep them? And that's one of the biggest strategies that I believe in.
Yeah. And implementing that, like, and also how do you measure that too as well? Measuring, let's talk about measure, like employee retention is something that you should be measuring on a yearly basis, right? What's like a KPI that you track for that typically? How do you measure that across companies?
So this is going to be a little controversial, but I think that we are obsessed with KPI and dashboards. And KPIs and dashboards are important. Don't get me wrong, but they're history report. They tell us based upon the expectation, what were the results? Nothing wrong with that, but it is it's not a complete tool, right? So if you're just looking at historical data, KPIs and dashboards are important to look at. The tools that I believe matter most are the tools that help us to detect problems early before they ever show up on dashboards. Because once they show up on the dashboard, it's history. I really believe in most parts of life, early detection is the key to survival. I believe that. And so what I've been able to do is to create some tools and start being able to see things that show up before they actually are history. They're actually things that people are going through emotionally. People are going through relationally. They're going through from a skill assessment standpoint. I can identify those things and we can go to work on them early so that they don't show up in a negative lag on their KPIs or on their dashboards. And so one of the things that I think is critical that to measure is, how do you detect things earlier in people? You know, how do you see things? And, you know, some of that has to do with skill development of the leader, to where the leader can, for example, know how to go into a room and read the room. And I'm not talking about reading minds, but you're watching the tonality shifts. You're watching about the engagement levels. You're just watching about things that are indicators of something coming that may not have arrived yet, nor you've not even been able to name, but you can see it and you can feel it. Have you ever been in a place where you felt something, but you couldn't even really name it yet, but you knew something maybe was off?
Yeah, of course.
That's what I teach people to do, is how do you put a name on those things that you're feeling early so that you can come to terms with them before it becomes more of a nightmare than you want to deal with? So when it comes to performance lags, when it comes to relationship, collaborations, all those things, there are early indicators that you can see if you just know what to look for that help offset a problem early that ultimately doesn't show up in greater magnitude later. And so I don't really do a lot of, around this work, because my work is really about how people are thinking and how they're feeling and how that affects their performance. So I'm looking early, not as much at KPIs and dashboards, and nothing wrong with that. It's a part of it. But when you're able to maybe diagnose stuff early, and it'll maybe hit the dashboard different. And that's what we do. It's just like, okay, how do you detect these things before they actually show up and create the damage that they will in areas of performance in particular. And then it'll change. It usually changes the KPI dynamics of the dashboard.
Yeah. It's like another way to say it. It's like you're measuring a leading indicator versus a lagging indicator.
Exactly. Right?
And the lagging indicator is a KPI, which is a kind of a employee churn. So the way you can kind of guess measure that is basically kind of maybe asking the employees or surveying the employees about their satisfaction, things like that. That would be like a way to measure the leading before they actually leave, which is an actual in the KPI, which is something that's already happened right in the past.
Yeah. And so we have, I mean, most HR departments out of companies, they do these semi-annual kind of general survey kind of questions to find out the health condition. The problem is this: we have emotions and feelings that affect us second by second, not every 6 months. So what you want to try to do, and there's some great groups out there that, you know, really are great at discerning dashboards, KPIs, and all that. But I think we're better served when we can catch something early that's going on in people's lives. So for example, I've got a program we do, is called the Pulse Check. And so once every other week, I send out a 3-question or 4-question survey. It takes them about 2.5 minutes to fill out. And what it does is I've gained enough confidence in my training with them to where they now speak out, right? And they're like, if there is something that is affecting the way they're feeling, there's friction somewhere involved, if there's flow challenges, or even some of the great things that are happening in their life, I want to know it. Because we need to respond now, not 90 days later. And so one of the great things is the feedback I'm getting from the employees to be able to go like, okay, hey, because if you take the data I pull, I've seen this for 2 years now, I can take the data that I've pulled from these pulse checks and I can go to a leader and without even asking them to tell me, I can look at the data I've pulled with the employee and say, this is probably what's going on before you show me their KPIs. And it is remarkable how it matches up, right? And so if there's lags, they don't have to tell me. The employees are telling me based upon some of these conditions that they're experiencing that they've shared with me. And so I just give leaders an opportunity to respond quicker than generally what KPI and dashboards show.
Yeah, yeah. Why does a culture a company tolerates under pressure matter more than the culture they talk about when things are calm?
So pressure reveals what you've really built. Like when things are calm, there are adjustments that can be made, but generally people don't. I love pressure. I think pressure reveals what you have and what you don't. And I think we run from pressure. And I think pressure is an additive to business that just needs to be contained, right? It doesn't need to be eliminated. And I think what we work way too hard trying to remove pressure and try to remove disagreement and try to remove all of these things that are just trying to teach us about the actuals of where we're at, who's involved, and what we can do about it. And so pressure is something I try to teach customers to see as a response to the data that people are perceiving right now. So pressure comes in and it does in all areas of our business. And that's when we know what we've got. And so, and then it's in pressure moments where the best adjustments occur to create the ability, the culture to hold together more than in calm times. Calm times is just like easy, man. I mean, it's like easy. And it's the times of pressure that really define what we've built and then what we can do with that built to move forward.
It also speaks to being an entrepreneur, that if you can weather the storm as a business owner, and it's also not giving up, right? Because I've been through a lot of, you know, times that's been difficult in my business. It's been, you know, 9 years now, almost 9 years. So I've been through that, those cycles, and just kind of making sure that you stay the course, right? That's and just, you know, things are going to happen, just staying the course and seeing what to happen. That's a good indicator. I mean, I think the people that last a long time that are successful are really like kind of just didn't give up. That's another way to look at it. Just didn't give up.
Well, and I think they expect it. Like, I think any business built strong that endures has learned to realize that pressure is a partner part, is an actual partner of growth. Like, I just think that's the way that I mean, I've known a lot of successful people that have not just how do we protect ourselves against pressure, but we anticipate it. Like, we know it's coming. And how do we best build our company so that when, look, I live in Florida. And, you know, we get hurricanes. We got lucky this year, didn't get one really to speak of. But people live their lives and build their worlds in preparation for something that they anticipate coming, don't know when, but they know it's coming. And I think businesses have to do that. I think you have to build the foundation of your business properly so that anticipating when pressure comes, storms come, you're prepared for it. And I think that there are key indicators in the build that have to be focused on that hold things together when pressure hits. And then you have to get your team kind of rallied around that collectively as a culture and practicing the same thing so that when pressure comes from any angle, we're prepared. And it's like living in Florida. If you're going to live in Florida, you can expect it. Like, you can expect hurricanes, and you've got to expect and prepare for that. And I think businesses who don't prepare are the ones who generally fall apart when pressure really hits. And so my job is, how do we prep people for pressure? Because it's coming. And the way you do that is you build an organization around principles that you know create endurance, even in pressure situations.
Yeah. Why does a culture, a company tolerate under pressure more? Like you talked about that before. So what are some early signs that culture or talent or effort is really holding a business back?
The first and most foremost thing that I think is an indicator is there's lack of clarity. Like they may have signs on the wall about their mission and their vision and all that other kind of, like most people do. But when I talk to an employee and they don't know what to do tomorrow because the expectation is not, and listen, it's not good enough to say, go sell. People have to need structure. And so clarity keeps our eye on the ball, so to speak. And so when pressure comes, clarity steps in and goes like, all right, though we feel this outside pressure, this is the direction that we're moving. This is what we're seeing as important. And clarity is an early, when people don't know really what the expectation is, how can you hold them to be accountable? And so I think I see a lot of companies with the early indicator of a culture that's collapsing is they just lost clarity. I think that they're companies that are able to build strong because they understand the power of chemistry. For example, I think we live in a day and age where businesses have tons of talent, but nobody works together really anymore. Even inside of companies, you've got sales warring against production and production warring against admin. And it just goes on and on and on. So it's a great example of chemistry. I failed chemistry generally in high school and didn't take it after that. But one thing I did learn about chemistry is that two elements, the right elements that come together, can create a dimension of life that separately they can't. Perfect example is water. It's two elements that are compatible that came together that do two things without each other separately, but once they came together, they create water. So for example, oxygen is something we breathe and we need to live. But when you pair oxygen with two parts of hydrogen, it produces another life-giving agent called water. So if you know much about hydrogen, it's very volatile and it's not trustworthy, in my opinion. I mean, you don't just, it's a compound and an element that if you don't handle it carefully, it can cause some problems. And what if just you took one element of hydrogen or one part hydrogen and one part oxygen? You wouldn't get water. Inside of businesses, you've got parts, elements, talents, ability. When you learn to pair them properly, those two elements together, though they produce individually what needs to be done, maybe to accomplish what they need in their life, you pair them up. Those two elements are able to produce things together that they could not apart. You've added and mentioned to your business by just pairing people properly, right? And so as good as things seem to be with organizations who have great talent, it's like me pulling a veil back when I start pulling people together with talents and abilities, motivation and wiring that matches up. And then they're able to gain ground together that they never could apart. So I tell companies this all the time. Having individual talent is critical to success. But when you find exponential success is when you can pair elements, and chemistry exists to create something that apart is impossible. Those are, when I don't see chemistry inside of an organization where there's improper pairing, people are isolated, living in their silos, it's a sign of cultural erosion.
Yeah. Another way to look at it is that if you guys are trying to reach a destination and you're rowing a boat, it's like one is rowing one direction, one is rowing against the other direction. It's going to be much harder to reach that destination. So it's going to be creating clarity around that single outcome. How do you create that clarity? How do you actually, you talked about a lot of the clarity, but what are the practical ways to do that for a business?
Yeah. So I think clarity as a beginning point is just everybody understanding, to your point about the boat, we're rowing in the same direction. And everybody that sits in a seat on this boat has an opportunity to contribute to that. And if you're interested in it, we want you here. And if you're not, maybe this isn't that great of a fit. And so I think that we've just, if you really boil down clarity to me, and listen, this is, I think, a really good way to describe it. Clarity to me creates orientation before movement. So you can take me outside and blindfold me, and I can run and create movement. But if I can't see where I'm going, I'm probably going to run into something that I shouldn't have had I been able to see. And so what we try to do is say this, let's get oriented before in terms of our expectations, and let's get really, really clear on our roles, and let's get very, very clear in terms of what promotion looks like, and let's get very, very clear so there's less questions, proper orientation, and then let's put some speed to it. But what we do as businesses is we come in and think speed is the answer. If it, like, just do it faster, do it more often, and all of a sudden, if you don't have proper orientation, you could end up in China and you wanted to go to Ocala, Florida. If there's not proper orientation that comes from clarity, speed runs you further from where you need to go. Let's get oriented. Let's get clear. Let's get understanding about what we're, why we're here, what direction we're going, get very clear on it, and then put movement to it.
Yeah, yeah. And what does it look like when that happens for a business, when they're clear about their goals, the outcomes? What does that actually practically look like?
Yeah, there's less guesswork. So I think a lot of businesses guess their way either to success or not, right? And so, and it's because they just have not been able to orient not just themselves, but their people to what success and good looks like. And so that's what you do. You have to really reduce things down to the simplest form so that the people that are there are clear in thought and they get up every day. In that Forbes article I read too, it said that 4 out of 5 employees employed today will get up tomorrow and go to work and guess their way through the day because they don't have clear expectation about direction. And people go like, no, Reggie, I know. I sell. Okay. So when you talk to me about selling, what are the steps that you take every day that create clear direction with the opportunity of results, not just I got to sell? And very few people know that. So what ends up happening is that we get frustrated with the output of some of our people. And honestly, most of the problems that we faced was because we just weren't really, really clear with them on what good and successful looked like, and that their piece fits the overall strategy. So we just, I go in and do exercises that are very simple, like, conversations around clarity, exercises around clarity, and accountability to clarity. And it's just reducing it down to that simple strategy. And then all of a sudden, people do this. When clarity is a priority, two things happen. They're going to eliminate things that create the distraction that get them from clarity. Or number two, they're going to delegate it. See, a lot of people, a lot of owners that I know can't get clear because their hand or their efforts are in everything as opposed to one thing that matters. And so one of the things that I do in going in is I get that place with starting with owners to be able to go like, okay, there's 100 things going on here. And you think, especially with entrepreneurs, they think that if they don't get their hands in it, it's probably not going to work. Excuse me. And then they've got talented people around them. So we look at elimination and delegation. If what you do is what you do is the highest form of impact on your team, what would that be? And then we start looking at, all right, with these other things that have to be done, who are the people here that can get them done with impact and desire? Because I've got at times in my past, I've delegated stuff off to people that weren't any better at it than I was, but it just got it off my plate. That's clarity. Like, am I coming in and are these people wired to do these things that I don't want to do, I'm not good at? And if I just pass it on just because I can pass it on, doesn't help anything. It just moves the burden. And so you got to hire around kind of what you do well, what needs to be done in addition to that, and then you plug the right people in so that everybody comes to work every day in their full capacity to be able to do the job needed to move us collectively forward together. And that's what most people don't do, man. They they understand the problems, but they'll just find an able body and throw them in there. And then all of a sudden people get to do these things that they're not really good at, but I've got a job at least. And then ultimately they burn out, or they create distractions or cause more problems. So that's how clarity is established with me, is what do you do that you're gifted in, your abilities that resonate, just not with just how you think about you, but the impact that others feel from that. And then let's go through the process of, okay, what can you eliminate with the people that you have? I'm sorry, delegate with the people, these tasks that you have that will fulfill them, like what you're doing fulfills you. And then maybe we need to look at what's really you think is priority and that's really not that important, and let's just eliminate it. That's where clarity comes. Elimination and delegation, and being able to really understand, this is what I do well, and if I can do this 90% of my day, and then I can pass along burden and responsibility to the people qualified to do it, organizations, health is restored pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think you described a very common challenge with a lot of contractors that I've worked with in terms of marketing, because they're really unclear in terms of when they hire a marketing agency. They're unclear of what the expectations should be or what the results should be, right? So a lot of times, exactly what you described. So for example, right, you have a contractor that will win the hire a marketing agency, and they delegate it to their office manager making the hire, where they actually, I need marketing, right? They have an office manager go through the interviews. Office manager is not as equipped to actually go through that process. And the owner is just looks at the proposal, looks at the pricing, and then signs up. And then 12 months later, they say, hey, this marketing sucks. It's my fourth or fifth vendor. And it's at the end of the day, it's like it's a lack of clarity and education too. So that's like a very common thing. Like it's like, if for example, if you had a roofing company today, or just a regular contracting business, and you know nothing about marketing, but you have the business acumen about clarity and all that, you understand that, how would you go across about hiring a marketing partner? What would you do in that situation?
Yeah. So I always hire for reason before role. Let me explain that. So I believe in the beginning, we're all built with a reason to be here. Like it oozes out of us. But what we're taught to do is chase a role. Like, and so we study for a role, and sometimes it doesn't match up to our created reason. Does that make sense? Like we're all gifted with certain elements of that's uniquely us. And it's very, very easy for us to start sliding quickly away from our reason and move more into a role that we're interested in. So I'm a creative person, but I promise you this, which I think creativity is a huge part of marketing, but I don't need to be in marketing because I don't know the other elements that go with that. My reason that I have understood now, and I've clarified in my own life, is priority, not a role. And so what happens is we bring people in that we like, oh man, this is a good dude. Look at their experience. Look at their background. We can teach with all the tools that we have available, with anybody can do, I can find somebody to help me internally with marketing or sales or whatever. And we just, the role that you have doesn't fit the reason they're supposed to be there. And so it gets frustrating. You said 12 months later, dude, I see them 12 hours later going like, this was a mistake. It's too much money. There's blah, 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 blah. And so they try to force people who have no reasonable skill to do what they need to do, but that needs to be done in this case for marketing. And they think, well, they're here. They ought to be able to understand it and learn it. And it just is not their skill. And so the thing that I do before anything is I find matches. Like I want to know, okay, if I have a marketing need and I'm looking to bring, so you'll laugh at me about this, but any interaction I generally have with people that has a business connection to it, there's a specific assessment that I use that helps me to understand their motivation before they show up, which leads me to understand better their roles, right? And so I'm really, really good at reason and role fitting together and matching up inside of companies to fulfill a task needed. The biggest mistake I think businesses make is just putting wrong people in the wrong seats because there's something there that needs to be done, and they give no consideration to where even what you're asking of me, does it fulfill me enough to me want to get up and do it every day? And so I think it all boils down to that. What's my reason? What's my gifting and my wiring? What is the things that that inspire me? What are the things that drain me? And understanding that my role will determine the outcome of my results. And so I think we just got that backwards.
Yeah, yeah. You identified six core friction points that destabilize teams. Why does misalignment in these areas create so much drag?
About 7 years ago is a perfect example. My wife and I were living in Colorado, maybe eight. And I don't know if you've been to Colorado much, but in the summers, the golf is wonderful. Like I'm a golfer. And I had a buddy of mine come up and he spent 4 days with us and we golfed three straight days. That fourth day when he left, I couldn't even take him to the airport. My back was out of alignment. And I don't know if you've ever had back problems, but if your back is out of alignment, everything hurts. Like anytime you try to move that one little vertebra out of alignment or whatever it may be, or a strain or whatever that you've pulled, until that thing gets back into alignment, everything else is affected. That's the way our business is. So what happens is in these six conditions that I think are critically important to prosperity or not with companies, if one of those gets out of alignment, everything else is affected. Like if it's not in alignment, like kind of a spine in our back. And so I have to go in and massage things to get alignment back in those six areas so movement can be fluid again. And it doesn't mean you got bad people, but if people are not aligned in these six areas, it's going to create an imbalance and it's going to create a short. It's going to create a misalignment that produces things nobody wants. Sometimes it's out of pain. Sometimes it's just, we just lose our way because we're in pain over this situation and circumstance. So that's the way I see it. It's like a business has a spine to it. And there are critical things inside of that business spine that if they get out of line are going to throw the entire operation out of whack. You're not either. It's going to create pain that's usually hard to correct until you slow down and get the proper hands in there, so to speak, to help manipulate the spine back into alignment so that the body, the business can move forward with success. I don't think people have talent problems. I think they have alignment problems. I just think that, people are not aligned. And as a result, with these six components, and they're not the only six components, it's just the ones I've seen that have worked. Once you can kind of manipulate them like a chiropractor would, so to speak, to where they're back in line. And it took my back for about 4 months to get straightened back up. And I'm a full grown man. And I was crying like a baby when I'd go into that chiropractor, dude, because there was a pressure point in me that I couldn't fix myself. It took somebody from the outside to come in who knew the back. Like this guy knew the back. He knew the exercises to put me through. He knew what to do because he realized that the quality of my life was suffering because of one out of place vertebra in my back. And so when that thing, it was like I woke up one morning and the pain was gone because I was aligned again. And so business is no different. Like, there are, no matter what you call them, if there's six or there's 10 or whatever, your business is built on a spine, basically. And there are things that keep us aligned. And if they get out of line, we got problems. Sometimes it's pain. Sometimes it ultimately ends up in destroying our business. You've got to have a specialist to come in, or you've got to have enough mind about you as a business owner to adjust things that have moved out of alignment, so that we can get moving without pain again.
And what are the six? What are the actual six?
Mine starts with clarity. Like I mentioned, I think that clarity is the top performing element of any company, that if it gets out of a line, things just go crazy. The second thing is communication. I'm not talking about frequency. I'm talking about accuracy. I think we've gotten out of alignment in terms of truly how to stop talking at each other and start talking to each other. We've just lost that. And that's an important build. That's one of the six conditions to me of a healthy, thriving company. The third thing is chemistry. Like, I think that people have to, you know, they have to realize that we need each other for a reason, right? And so chemistry is important. If we can't get people to work together, we're going to have a problem having a successful business. The other thing that people find funny when I say this is collisions. I think we try to avoid collisions too much. I think collisions, healthy collisions, produce change in an organization that's needed. Why do we think that differing thoughts have to be so combative? But that's what happens. We get in these zones of like, this is my idea. And if you challenge this idea, then you're challenging me. And it's not that at all. So I bring back healthy collisions to organizations where they understand this is going to happen. And how do we deal with this in a way that's healthy? Collisions, to me, the key to them is, can you walk away from them without lasting and lingering damage? And there's a way to do that to where people can be heard and not take it personal. Most times we get into collisions and it just makes everybody leaves just undone with each other. And so how do you have these collisions that don't destroy everything? Right. And the next step, number five, is collaboration. Collaboration is not us liking each other. Collaboration is when we get into a place to where our collective efforts start moving the business forward. Sometimes I've seen businesses that are failing because we just can't get production to agree with and understand sales enough to put aside pettiness and just get the job done. And so one of the things that I think increases exponentially our ability to grow the business is when we've got factions inside of our own company who just won't collaborate. They withhold from each other. You know, it's not about, again, us liking each other. It's about us realizing when we come to work, our job is to move the business forward. And whatever I have to do to help you to get that done collectively, then that's what I've got to do. And people just are not willing to do that. I hear this all the time. That ain't my job. Right. But what you do affects others' jobs. And ultimately, until we can learn to collaborate our efforts, the business can't, it might move forward, but it's going to be in spite of you. Right. So I'm trying to help people collaborate. And then the final thing is contribution. And I think this is where we really mess up. We just don't acknowledge people and their contribution enough. I'm not talking about us getting around and cheerleading each other constantly, but I'll give you a perfect example. This owner I was telling you about earlier, he called me, he goes like, man, I can't connect with this guy, Reggie. I just can't connect. And he was basically prepping him for operations manager. And I said, so after I talked to this ops guy, I came back to the owner and I said, I know why you can't, because all you do is tell him what he's not doing well that needs to be corrected. And so sometimes you just have to acknowledge to him that even if you don't agree with him, his contribution, if nothing else, matters to the way you think about the outcome that you need differently. He goes, well, how would I do that? I said, get up every day. And this is the task I gave him. I said, for the next 30 days, your job to report back to me is this. Who did you contribute to just with gratitude, thanksgiving, or acknowledgement? One person a day for the next 30 days. I don't want you to think as this is manipulation. It's just going to open you up as a manager in a different way. And as an owner, people will see you differently. Well, that happened about 3 weeks ago. And he calls me almost every day going like, my God, I didn't realize. Well, when people feel acknowledged and they feel their contribution matters, guess what they do? They go over and above. But if they can't get anything out of you as their manager, just from simple tasks that they're really trying hard on, and even though it's not right, you know, they don't feel like they're, you know, not worth being there anymore. And you can instill that into your leadership style. Contribution matters. And I'll tell you something else. Contribution, acknowledgement of contribution is a huge retaining tool to businesses. Those are the six.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I've actually learned to do a little bit better. That's one of my things that one of my managers does really good and actually learned from them. and I've actually kind of implemented a little bit of myself. And yes, it's a huge impact. It's very underrated. It's a very big impact to people that I really don't talk about a lot.
Yeah, why do you think we quit just showing gratitude?
It helps people. It just helps people feel connected. It feels connected and helps people like acknowledge, right? If you acknowledge even the work they're doing, that's very important.
My wife and I have been married 37 years, and I still think it's important that I tell her how thankful I am for her in different ways. Because sometimes we can just even get comfortable with people and just forget. Look, I mean, we've been together 37 years. Why would I have to say thanks for cooking me breakfast this morning? Like, we've been together 37 years. Well, what happens is if I don't, it's not a requirement, but I've noticed that we start getting distance just by not acknowledging the small things that we accomplish for one another that really, really matters. And so I would say that to any business person here that's leading, dude, look, you've got to correct, you've got to make decisions on people, but you also need to be the person who's willing to go in and show gratitude and thankfulness and, you know, acknowledge contributions because it lights a fire under somebody to want to do more. That's psychologically proven. If I know you appreciate, now listen, I don't think that people need to make stuff up just to sound like they're grateful. Like if my wife makes a horrible breakfast, which she don't, but if she did, I shouldn't be going like, oh, thank you for that burnt toast. That's not what I'm saying, right? But I'm saying if you can't find something that you're grateful for the effort that these people and energy that they bring, you may have the wrong person there. And so contribution is a huge, huge piece to cultural and business alignment. And so what I do is I go in and I look at these six areas and I do a quick analysis of these six areas. We do some assessment work I'd love to tell you about as well. But as I do that assessment on the spine angle, right? Like what's in line, what's out of line, and where do we need to make adjustments? That's the beginning point of this, because the body will only move in an area that it's aligned. If it gets out of alignment, the business gets out of alignment, it's going to drag. You're going to see lags. You're going to see some challenges. So let's correct the misalignment that is keeping us from proper movement toward the success that we want.
Yeah. You use AI as a way to slow down thinking, right? And challenge assumptions. How should contractors be using AI differently than they are now?
And I'm an old school guy, right? So, but AI has become a valuable piece of how I go to market. I'll give you a perfect example for me. I do these pulse checks. I do them every 2 weeks. And if you got a couple hundred, you know, responses, it's hard to sit down and try to calculate what's the theme, what's the overriding issue here that I now can train to, that I can now share in a leadership report. And AI has been that tool that's helped me to reconcile lots of data that becomes useful to me in reaction to the data that I'm collecting and then making it usable in explanation. Does that make sense? So like rather than me trying to look at 200 different responses and go like, what's the common denominator here? That tool has helped me to really be able to take the mass amount for me, a lot of data, and not just extrapolate it, but to pull it in and make sense of it. And the more I've used that tool, it's helped me to understand the value that it brings at that angle. I think that using AI for me has not been a crutch, but it's been a huge addition. It's helped me to be able to space my life out more. It's helped me to really to be able to take tasks off that that are important, but I'm not good enough to do them. And so the time becomes way too much time spent when I could have been doing something else. So AI has become kind of a team member for me, and particularly around the area of data and pulling it together and making it useful to me with my clients.
Yeah. You're actually starting a company based on that, right? It's like, because I saw the domain. Can you talk more about your new business?
Our business is called Propel.OS. And so We take three basic lens that we look, when I go into a company, I look through three different lens. The first place we start is what I call why.OS. And this is the place that we begin to go back to what we talked about earlier, where people are able to understand not what they do, but why they do it. Because when you can find out a person's motivation and their wiring, it changes everything. Let me give you a perfect example. Again, my wife and I have been married 37 years. And during that time, we've had some knockdown dragouts. Like she is a pharmacist by trade. She is a very, very organized thinker. I'm not. And so I took the assessment, and my why, my motivation, my wiring is centered around one central principle, and that is what they call make sense. So if something doesn't make sense to me, I freeze. I can't go forward. Well, there are 9 of these traits that we analyze and look at so that now, and my wife took hers, and she's a right way person, right? She's like, there's a path we get on. There's a one way to do this. We're going to stay on this path. And so her and I, she could tell me things and I wouldn't understand it. And my response was, I'll argue about it. And so when I came across these assessments and we both realized I'm a make sense person, she's a right way person, it took arguments and disagreements from 30 minutes down to 3 minutes. And I mean, because a perfect example, we were in Montana and she was at a pharmacy she was working at, and she came home and explained to me something about her day. And she saw this dazed look on my face. I just didn't understand. And rather than like make it an argument, because I didn't understand, she looked at me and she said this, it looks like, and I'm not trying to be condescending here, but it looks like you don't understand what I'm saying. I said, I don't. She explained it to me in a way I understood, and we were able to move forward. When people understand their why, and they understand the why of who they're in conversations with, it changed the dynamics of the interaction. So we go from why.OS, which is self-awareness of our own why, to who.OS. And that's where pairings come in. So when you get into a building in a business, who works best together? Who drains each other? Whose relationship creates friction? How do we build a bridge so that friction can become flow? And then, so we start looking at now, this is the why. Is this the right role? Is this the right responsibility? Is this the right relationship inside? So everything starts why for me. Then the who becomes how do we properly pair? And then the final thing is what we call what.OS. And that is, all right, now that we know why we do what we do and who we're best paired with, what kind of contributions can come out of that? What's the contribution that can come out of that when these proper pairings occur to produce something that alone none of us can do? And so that's kind of our process. It's like, and then when we start evaluating things from the lens perspective, it shows us what part of that spine's off. And so then we can go in and take these 6 conditions and start working on these 6 conditions. So the lens just tells us where the pain's at and where the misalignment's at. The conditions, the 6 conditions, tell us where we need to work and where the specific pressure point is that needs adjustment.
Awesome. So where do people find you? Where do people find you, RJ?
Right now they can go to culturaldisruptor.com, and that, you know, we got a little landing page website kind of there. It gives them a little bit of understanding. If they're more interested in booking some type of discovery call, we can do that from there. I'm very active on social media. And most of my handle stuff, I mean, most of my stuff is under Reggie Brock. So I'm pretty easy to find, on most social media outlets. But yeah, that's the easiest way for them to get a hold of me. And I never tell people I think their culture is broken. I don't think that at all. But I think most all of us need adjustments. And what we try to do is just kind of come into cultures when it's available and disrupt what's off to get alignment back in place so that the body and the business can move properly. And so most people feel like something is off kind of, and they just really can't help identify it. So our tools, our strategies, and kind of our programs help them kind of identify, detect. So I tell people this, we do 3 things, then I'll close. You know, I think that Propel.OS is the first fully integrated cultural operating system. I do. I think that from soup to nuts, we have built a frame to where people can install it, and it does three things. It does, number one, it helps detect issues early in people and their performance. So if you've got a business and there's performance issues that you're experiencing, we can help detect what's going on. The second thing is we feel like that teaching people how to maintain clarity under pressure is critically important to ongoing success of a business. So this system does that. And then the final thing is I think that we're helping build teams that people never want to leave, cultures that no one wants to leave. So if any of those things people feel it resonates with them, or they feel like, oh, well, that makes sense to me, man, we'd love to have a discovery call with you and just talk through it. And if we can help you, we'll be happy to do that.
Awesome. Reggie, I appreciate your time. Thanks, man.
Thank you for having me.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.